order.
You're listening to the Irish Times Inside Politics podcast.
It's Wednesday, July the 19th, and you're very welcome to the latest edition of the Inside Politics podcast from the Irish Times. I'm Hugh Linehan. The dog days of August are fast approaching, but there's still a few items outstanding on the political agenda. So I sat down earlier with Mary Minahan from our political staff, and we got on the phone to our political editor, Pat Leahy, who's on his annual busman's holiday to the McGill Summer School in Glenties, County Donegal. Mary, you're manning the, or personing the lonely post of the Irish Times politics desk this week. Everybody's headed off. It's a fascinating little video you shot of the cabinet heading off in a white minibus this morning. And, oh, is that what your job is at the moment, tracking them with a video camera?
Well, I'm glad I was there, actually, because they made a big play of the fact that they were getting a bus, turned out to be a Defence Forces bus, actually, out to Castletown House in Kildare, where they're having an off-site cabinet meeting today, and they're going to focus on the environment, climate change and the economy. And so I got there and I saw a few ministers going in. All right, I saw Simon Coveney, Joe McHugh, and I saw Michael Ring, and I took a video of them leaving on the bus, and there were a few empty seats there.
Are you saying the full cabinet was not on the bus?
That's what I'm saying. I saw Paul Keogh and I saw Owen Murphy on the bus. And there are a few other sort of shady figures in the background that maybe listeners will help me in deciphering who they are. But definitely the whole cabinet wasn't there.
But so if you were a member of the cabinet and you came, let's say, from Kildare or somewhere, you know, Wicklow or whatever it might
perhaps
be, why would you come into government buildings to get the bus back out to Castletown?
That's absolutely right. That makes sense. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I suppose for the optics of it, it would have been a good idea for them to show up.
So tell us, is there any politics at the moment? There is.
Oh,
a
yes,
bit,
there's plenty
there?
Of politics. There's no doubt about it. And there's some very stark contrasts. Yesterday we heard that, we knew that the water bills were going to be refunded. But we were a little bit shocked, I think, to hear Taoiseach Enda Kenny, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, keep up, turn up a 300 million amount of money that we didn't know was there. And that was, Pat will have heard that confirmed up in Glenties by the Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, who said that government spending was currently running about 300 million behind profile. So the water charges refunds are going to cost 170 million. And I think something like 10 million is estimated for a campaign to let people know they can get the money back.
So this is money down the back of a couch was found to help with this rather embarrassing.
Yeah. And I just thought it was a very stark contrast between what Leo Varadkar was actually announcing yesterday, which was a 30 cent increase in the minimum wage, which he described as modest, which I think is probably an understatement, although I should say that the 30 cent increase wasn't his idea. It was the recommendation of the Low Pay Commission. So I think what government is trying to do is package this up as a 12 euro increase for those who manage to work the full 40 hour week, because I think that sounds a little bit better than the rather paltry 30 cent. But, you know, it was just extraordinary when you put that 30 cent figure against the 300 million that they've managed to turn up. Leo Varadkar just kind of, you know, casually shrugged and said every year government departments underspend, and it wasn't a matter of a whip around or ministers being asked to curb spending or to give over some spending, that this money would just be there.
It's very convenient, isn't it?
It's extraordinary, and I think it masks the fact that this is a terrible humiliation for Fine Gael, really, that it's one of its keynote policies that destroyed the Labour Party pretty much and brought Fine Gael to its knees, that now it's actually just reversing horses on completely now and giving the money back. But I think they'll do their best to spin it. And, you know, just before Christmas, people will be getting 300 odd euro back. And won't that be nice? I mean, who's going to turn their nose up at that, I suppose, before Christmas? Although we are reporting today that Simon Coveney, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, told his Fine Gael colleagues that he believed a number of people would actually prefer to pay their water charges and would not seek a refund.
Pat, you'd be one of those people, wouldn't you?
I wouldn't get out of bed for less than 300 euros in the morning, not to mind fill out a complicated form for the refund of water charges. I think the Pascal Donoghue was asked about Leo Varadkar's comments here in Glenties last night, and he identified this. He elaborated a little on the 300 million overspend figure. He said, you know, that's the amount that they've identified as an underspend, rather, in the first 6 months of the year, and, you know, there may be some additional tax revenues beyond what they have estimated, and he says he's confident that that will supply sufficient resources resources for the refund of water charges. I think, you know, as I say, that'll be interrogated a little bit.
But Pat, aren't tax revenues running behind rather than ahead of estimates right now?
Yes, they are. Now, Department of Finance, and they say they're very confident that they'll be made up by the end of the year. And some types of tax revenues, particularly, say, corporation tax, are inherently unpredictable. But just as they're unpredictable on the upside, they're also unpredictable on the downside. So the government cannot rely on the sort of surpluses beyond what was expected coming in this year, as did in recent years. The other thing about an underspend in government departments is that most government departments will try and make that up over the second half of the year. If they have been allocated a certain amount of money, they will, many of them will do their damnedest to make sure that they spend their budgets over the course of the year. There will be an underspend for sure in social welfare, because the numbers of people claiming unemployment benefit are smaller than what was anticipated. But remember that out of the social welfare budget must be paid the Christmas bonus as well. So it's not quite, I think, as straightforward as it was presented yesterday.
Mary, I mean, that's right, isn't it? And in a way, isn't it, we're all taking a bit of a deep breath now, and the government is, the cabinet is down there in Castletown having its away day doing all that. But all the issues, and I'll come back to Pat on this in a minute, all the issues are going to be around these kind of questions of how much money is available, what's wise and prudent under this new Taoiseach ship.
Yeah, and as Pat correctly says, we don't know, and Leo Varadkar doesn't know. And just the point that Pat raised there about spending, like, I asked Leo Varadkar that yesterday, because he has basically alerted his ministers to the fact that he will be wanting to scoop up any excess that they have lying around at the end of the year. So I asked him, you know, are you not worried now that your ministers are going to be spending like crazy almost to get rid of their money? And he said no, that he hoped that they would spend their full allocations, but on the things that they were voted for in expenditure. So it's not a matter of just spending money to get it spent, but making sure that it goes to, or that making sure that the money goes to the projects that they were meant to go to in the first place. But, you know, as Pat says, we just cannot be certain. Now, we're only halfway through the year. Leo Varadkar said yesterday he'd love to give us a little bit more detail about where exactly this money was going to come from, but he would be able to do so in September or October, when he had a better sense of spending and taxation figures and so on. So really what he's tried to do, I think, is park this now until September. And he's saying that Owen Murphy, the housing minister, indicated to Cabinet yesterday his intention to bring legislation is obviously required now to bring in, because there will still be penalties. There will be penalties for people who, in the Taoiseach's words, waste and use excessive water. So legislation will be coming forward now in September, and we'll hear more details then.
Pat, when I hear about all this kind of jiggery pokery, it occurs to me one of the things, I've been away for the last couple of weeks, and thanks very much for sitting in for me. I'm so recently back that I've still got the mosquito bites to show for it. And while sipping my wine and watching the sunset over the Adriatic, I was taken by the invention of this new, this goes to show how boring my life is, this new measurement called the GNI, which is going to supposedly replace GNP or GDP as a measurement of the Irish economy. And I said, what the hell is this? Because all of a sudden it means that the Irish economy is something like 30% smaller than everybody's been presuming. And if you take that as a metric, all the equations change.
Indeed, I believe many people ponder the measurements of the Irish economy while watching the sunset over the Adriatic. All right, so you're probably not alone there. What happened last week was the standard measure of the size of the Irish economy. And from that, therefore, things like deficits, debt as a proportion of GDP and so forth have been unsatisfactory for years, have been recognized as being unsatisfactory for years, because they include some of capital inflows and outflows from very large multinational businesses that operate here. So they're not actually the sums that you are talking about passing through these companies are not actually part of the goods and services that are traded in the Irish economy. But what the GNI star has sought to do is, according to the CSO, is to provide a measurement of the Irish economy that takes account of these things. Now, you'll have to get one of the nerds from the business desk to explain the intricacies of this or the mechanics of how it works. But the political correspondent's chief guide to GNI is that it will show us with a smaller economy and therefore a larger debt as a proportion of that economy, and that could be significant. So the cash amount of the debt is the same. It's about 200 billion euros. That's what the state owes as its national debt. But the measurement of the size of the economy goes from, I think, about 270 billion euros a year down to 180 billion euros a year. So that's quite a significant change. Now, government says that it will not change their calculations for the budget, that it is a statistical exercise that is intended to enable them to make better informed policy choices and so forth. I find it hard to see how it won't affect calculations of the budget over a period of time, given what it says about, for instance, things like the size of the national debt and the deficit.
I mean, it's not just a question, though, Mary, of the national debt. If you bring in this new metric, I mean, we've had endless discussions over the years in this podcast, and we hear them on broadcasters all the time, about various policies, be they how much we spend on health, how much we spend on education, what the tax burden is, how we compare to other countries. And they all rely to some extent on these previous metrics of GDP or GNP. And all that stuff just gets thrown up in the air if we move to a different metric.
Yeah, just what's extraordinary is coming out, I think, from Glenties and various comments from ministers about the economy is the mixed messages that are coming out. I mean, on the one hand, our rainy day fund, which I sometimes think of as our running away money, seems to have been just, you know, being frittered off towards other projects. And we've heard in Glenties from the Department of Public Expenditures Secretary General Robert Watt, who's saying that the government should build up fiscal buffers with budget surpluses to prepare for what he describes as an inevitable economic slowdown. And then you've got the minister himself, Pascal Donoghue, saying that the Irish economy still faces the threat of overheating and it's critical that, you know, dangerous risks are avoided. So I think it's very difficult for people to understand what the actual message coming out from the government is. And naturally, most people don't concern themselves with that level. They're more concerned about issues that really affect them, like housing. And I think it's just absolutely well, there are many issues, I suppose, at the top of the government's list. I always say Brexit is such an absolutely huge one. And the housing issue just is absolutely massive at the moment. And, you know, it's extraordinary, really, that Owen Murphy is going to have to juggle both the water rebates and the housing issue. I mean, just government seems unable to get on top of the various crises that are ongoing within housing at the moment. Yeah. And it seems that, you know, it's not that building is not profitable, but building houses that people want to live in.
Which is a big question. And there is some investigation going into that. Papa, what's the sense up there? Because a lot of the great and good, as every year, are up there, or the great anyway, are up there in Glenties, you know, the head of the, you know, Department of Finance, Pascal Donoghue, lots of other people, eminent economists. What's the sense about this? You seem to have these two different narratives going on, that Pascal Donoghue and Leo Varadkar have signalled that they want to invest more in infrastructure, that they want to invest in the future of the economy. But on the other hand, you have this, you know, what was that famous, you know, the head of the Fed who said that the role was to pull away the punch, the cocktail punch, just as the party was beginning. And there's a cautionary note being sounded as well. Is it as confused as Mary is suggesting, or do you have a sense of what the overall thrust is?
I think it's, you know, you can look, one way of looking at it is as confused. The other way is, I suppose, of looking at it as the sort of elements that will coalesce into decision making come the autumn when we get into the budget and the capital plan and so forth. I mean, one of the big themes of the week here in Glenties has been the threat posed by Brexit and how that is going to affect big things and small things. Obviously, we're in a border county here, and there's a really strong sense amongst many of the speakers, particularly earlier in the week, and people like Dahi O'Kelly, who was Ireland's ambassador in London for several years. People who are specialists in EU affairs, like Bridget Laffin, who's here as well. And a sense coming across from an awful lot of those people in the Brexit debates was that the likely Brexit that we will eventually face is getting harder and harder. There's almost despair here, really, about the quality of decision making at the highest level of the British government, and a feeling that we are on a slide towards a hard Brexit, which will mean inevitably that there is a border on the island, and that may be mitigated by electronic means and so forth, but that the imposition or the reimposition of a border is kind of becoming an inevitability. Now, nothing is settled in that regard yet. So on one side, you have those sort of storm clouds gathering. On the other hand, you know, there is a very positive economic environment for both the broader economy and for the public finances. And that was evident in a lot of the economic presentations as well. Quite a bullish presentation yesterday by the IBEC chief economist. But I thought a really instructive presentation last night from Seamus Coffey, who's a UCC academic and head of the Fiscal Council, which is the government's independent kind of budgetary watchdog. And he was talking about, you know, he made no bones about the health of the Irish economy and the strength of the recovery. And that's there to see in the figures, no matter how you judge it through the old system or the new system. But he also talked about, I suppose, what are the problems of prosperity, the difficulty of building houses quickly, and the consequences of injecting large amounts of money into an economy that is already booming. And he warned very strongly, and you know, I'd really encourage people to go back and have a look at his presentation, because he warned very, very strongly about repeating the mistakes that the country made in economic policy making in the early 2000s and the mid-2000s. He didn't say, and he was very clear about not saying that we were, you know, we were repeating those mistakes. But I thought what was very clear from his presentation was that we are just at the stage now before the mistakes were made in the last cycle.
That was the classic kind of Charlie McCreevy, when I have the money, I'll spend it, pro-cyclical kind of, you know, state spending even more money, even as the economy's booming.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was, you know, again, Mary mentioned Robert Watt from the Department of Public Expenditure. And, you know, that again was a message that, you know, he was giving in his presentation yesterday of the need to be cautious and prudent and to build up fiscal buffers. So, you know, on the one hand, the government is faced with these, you know, pressing infrastructural needs, and housing, as Mary says, is the most obvious one of those. It is in the fortunate position where it has resources provided by taxation and a low interest rate environment, which makes borrowing cheap, to act to ameliorate the pressures in the economy and in society. But it's also being warned, you know, by some extremely influential voices that it has to go about this in the right way, because it's the easiest thing in the world to throw money at the problem and therefore, you know, store up much more serious problems down the line.
Now, Mary, I mean, you're observing this government as it flashes past in a white minibus. Is do you think this new Taoiseach and this new configuration of cabinet, most probably facing into a general election at some point in the next 18 to 20 months, let's say, is likely to be as cautious as some people are suggesting it should be in Glenties?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, because I think Leo Varadkar certainly wants to demonstrate that he is showing a bit of largesse, you know, on a modest scale, if you like. You know, I think they will package up this water refund as a, oh, look, here's a little Christmas bonus for everyone. You know, they talk about making a virtue out of necessity. I think that's what they're doing there. But it's fascinating, because we have this external factor, if you like, now Brexit, and that it just puts a big question mark over everything the government does. I was down in Kilkenny on Monday at the British Irish Parliamentary Assembly, which used to be a very kind of placid affair. Anemic was a word that was used actually by one of the members about their traditional discussions. But there's a bit of an edge crept in now, as you can imagine, because this was a body set up in 1990 and it was meant to, you know, foster relationships between the Houses of Parliament and the Houses of the Oireachtas. So you've got TDs, senators, MPs, members of the House of Lords, and you've also got people from Jersey and Guernsey and the Isle of Man and the Scottish Assembly, the Welsh Parliament and the Northern Ireland Assembly. And if it's just post-Brexit, it has taken on a really a totally different mentality, you know. It was just mentioned down there that there were a few, you know, there have been a few straws in the wind now that, as Pat says, a hard Brexit is on the way. I think we were all in this mindset that it wasn't going to be quite so bad. Things were going to be softer than we hoped. But say the British move on fisheries and the pulling out of the London arrangement, that is a bit of a straw in the wind that things are going to be much harder than we thought. And just talking to Tories down there, you know, they talk about not for turning. They, you know, you're talking to them about, see, this is dull and people don't really like to engage with this, but things like EU funding, like the Interreg and the peace programmes, which I know people don't give much thought to, but really have created something out of nothing in the border corridor. Mm. And that's all gone now, at least for the counties above the border in Northern Ireland. But, you know, if you're talking to Tories about this and they're looking blankly, they either don't know about these funding schemes or they just don't care. And in fact, some of them suggest that this funding will still be forthcoming because Europe can fund whoever it likes, which seems to me extraordinary because you're either in the club or you're out of the club. And one of the most prominent members of that assembly, actually Lord Dubs, who people might remember, he was he's a Labour peer. He was a former Northern Ireland office minister quite a few years ago now. He talked about a new generation of politicians now in Westminster who really, I think because things are viewed as having settled down on the peace
they
front
no
in Northern Ireland.
Sure, we saw that with the DUP questions
exactly.
A couple of months
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, yeah. And they're probably very representative of their constituents. They just don't engage with Northern Ireland at all. They have no idea what's going on there. And it clearly wasn't a factor at all in the Brexit referendum
sure.
campaign.
Sure.
And now belatedly the British ambassador spoke there and he was saying the last year had been spent trying to understand Ireland's specific concerns. I mean, talk about being a bit late.
I mean, this is pretty chilling stuff, Pat, isn't it? I mean, it's both in terms of the effect on the specific areas around the border, on the all-Ireland economy here, on the political dispensation in Northern Ireland, and probably as well, if it pans out the way that you're saying, probably a kind of a serious economic depression or economic turbulence in the United Kingdom, which is still one of our most significant trading partners.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I was here at McGill this time last year in the immediate wake of the Brexit vote, you know, whatever, only a few weeks after the Brexit vote. And I suppose everybody at that stage was trying to get their heads around what it would mean. But a year on, the mood is, I would say, you know, is 90% darker and more pessimistic here in terms of what people believe that Brexit will mean on the ground, or at least their conception of what the likely outcome, because you know there's so much yet that we don't know, but the realm of the possible, or the realm of the likely, I suppose, has moved much more towards a pessimistic end from an Irish perspective, and there was a real, you know, fear and worry in a lot of the contributions about Brexit here earlier in the week.
It's kind of out of our control, really, Mary, isn't it? We're kind of sitting here watching what happens in.
Yeah, it's a kind of a horrible feeling, you know. But again, having spoken to some of these Tories, their view of it is that Brussels is just trying to scare everyone and has convinced people that it's going to be a catastrophe if Britain pulls out of the European Union. And in fact, some of the Tories think that Brussels is actively trying to worsen the relationship between Ireland and Britain, just so that things, you know, won't go easy for the UK. Like, there's obviously obviously, well, I don't know, is it paranoia creeping in? Because obviously the European authorities can't make it too simple for Britain to just, you know, go off into that good night.
That's part of the dynamic. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like it has to, you know, because it doesn't want the union to, doesn't want the union to fall apart. But, you know, Emily O'Reilly, who's now the European Ombudsman, was down there. And she, I think she really caught that mood of nobody really knows. And she talked about how lobbyists are making a fortune from people's insecurity. And it's not lack of knowledge, because there just there isn't any knowledge. You know, we've never been in this space before. So people are actually making money out of the out of Brexit already. You know, she talked about it was something that was ripe for lawyers and lobbyists in Brussels. And she also talked about how the border, the possibility that the border in this country could become a pawn in this game. And yes, at the moment, it's high profile in the discussions, and that's good. But just to be very careful that it wasn't something that should be monetized, and we should try our best to take it very much out of that arena. But as you say, we're kind of horrified bystanders in what's going on.
Right. I think we should leave it there on that slightly grim note. But listen, Pat, thanks for taking the trouble to join us from Glenties, and we'll see you back here over the next few weeks. Thanks also to Mary. That's it for this edition of Inside Politics. Thanks to our producer Declan Conlon and engineer Rob O'Sullivan. Remember, you can mail me at hlinahan@irishtimes.com, or you can find me on Twitter. So, but until the next time, goodbye, and thanks very much indeed for listening.